Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. I took a trip to Livingston, Montana a couple of months ago to check out an exhibit about Highway 89 at the Livingston Depot Center. I'm writing a book about night sky experiences on Highway 89, from the border of Mexico to the border of Canada. So it doesn't take much to get me in my car or on a plane to check out something that might add to the book. And let's be honest, the tiniest suggestion that I should go to Montana, and I am there. I spent every summer of my childhood at our family cabin near Kalispell, but I had somehow convinced myself that I didn't like anything east of the Rocky Mountains. And then, in 2022, I met Livingston and Paradise Valley, and it was love at first sight. Oh my God! No wonder people like Jeff Bridges, John Mayer, and Dennis Quaid have called this place home. Dennis Quaid even built a personal observatory on his property for stargazing. And no wonder Anthony Bourdain fell in love with the Murray Bar and Hotel. During my recent visit, I met up with Chris King, the executive director of Explore Livingston. It's the best online resource for both residents and visitors who want to know all about this gorgeous slice of the American West. As we chatted, she told me about a new art gallery in town that was filled with astrophotography. So the next day I found myself in that art gallery, jaw dropped as I looked at image after image of beautiful night sky photography. The man behind the camera and the owner of the gallery is Matt Jackson. Not only is he a photographer, but he's also a biology genius who's working on specialized treatments for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. In other words, he's mega smart. Out of 76 episodes of the Night Sky Tours podcast, I've only done one interview in person, and that was Ted Blank in the very first episode. We sat at my dining room table and we had a great chat, and then I immediately abandoned in-person interviews. Until I met Matt Jackson. There I was in Livingston, my entire trip focused on night sky things related to my book, and I couldn't pass up the opportunity to just chat face to face with Matt. We sat outside in front of Matt's gallery called Montana Dark Sky Photography, and we had our conversation there. So unlike the other episodes that you've heard, this one actually includes all the sounds of being outside. We were literally less than 50 yards from Highway 89, so you're gonna hear some traffic noises. And the magpies were also hanging out in the nearby tree. Well, so hold on a minute. Should I admit that I didn't know what those beautiful birds were? I asked Matt and he goes, "Oh, those are magpies." Why are the beautiful birds also sometimes the pesty birds? Before we go to Matt, I also want to mention that I tried my hand at astrophotography myself while I was in Paradise Valley. It was just a few miles south from Matt's gallery. Now, let me be really clear. I own just one camera, and it's housed inside of my iPhone. One of the evenings I was in town, my daughter and I went to a stargazing experience at Sage Lodge in Paradise Valley. I already knew that the Milky Way was easily visible from Paradise Valley because I saw it after leaving a very special John Mayer concert at Pine Creek Lodge in 2022. So I'm with this small group of people behind Sage Lodge and I'm listening to Dr. Tom Rust as he's guiding us across the night sky. And the Milky Way was so bright overhead, you just couldn't miss it. And one guest said, "So we've been looking at this bright stuff in the sky. Is that the Northern Lights?" I wasn't even surprised by this mistake because over 80% of people in the world can no longer see the Milky Way from where they live. Anyhow, back to my attempt at astrophotography. I pulled out my iPhone and I decided to give it a try. I always keep my screen brightness down at night so that I don't ruin my night vision. And then I open the native camera app. I set the exposure to the maximum 10 seconds that's built into the camera. And then I held my breath so that I could hold still and I took a shot of the Milky Way. I could not believe it. I actually captured a picture of the Milky Way with Emigrant Mountain as a landscape, and it looked great. I did a tiny bit of editing just to get the brightness to match what I saw with my naked eye. Okay, so it doesn't even come close to looking like the images taken by Matt Jackson. But hey, I produced a respectable piece of iPhone astrophotography that night from Sage Lodge. You can see my photo in the online show notes at nightskytourist.com/76. Matt and I chatted about how he got into astrophotography, his pandemic road trip, and his dark sky advocacy. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, Matt Jackson. Matthew, thank you for joining me on the Night Sky Tourist podcast here live in Montana.
Happy to be here.
I'm excited to be here in Montana because you guys have such beautiful dark skies and you are an astrophotographer. Tell us how you got into that.
I kind of discovered astrophotography while I was in graduate school working on a degree in engineering. It was kind of an escape from work every day. And I just fell in love with it. Spent more time shooting the night sky. And after that, after I finished my PhD, I kind of just went full into it.
And you have a gallery here now in Livingston. How long has that been open?
I just opened a gallery about 1 month ago. So it's been a crazy, crazy ride for the last few weeks.
Livingston's a great place, though, for that because there's a lot of art galleries and things like that in the downtown area. So I feel like that fits right in here.
Yeah, we have a great local scene that's very into the arts. And there's also just dark skies in every direction. I travel probably an average of 30 minutes to an hour to go see the Milky Way in all its glory.
So you had told me previously that you did kind of a two-year living out of your car and road trips. So tell us a little bit about that.
So yeah, after I finished my PhD, I moved into the back of my Subaru Forester with my dog. I built out the Subaru and I lived on the road for 2 years. And I was shooting 5 nights a week minimum, just traveling the country and, you know, trying to find the coolest things I could find to shoot the stars over.
I think you had told me previously that you've been to, 37 states doing that?
Yeah, in 1 year I got to 37 states and shot night skies in every one of them. There's a few exceptions, although I think I've covered all 48 contiguous states now.
Wow.
In all that I've shot in. North Dakota, I have not shot in North Dakota.
I'm sure there's pretty good dark skies out there.
Actually, North Dakota has a really, there's a light pollution covering most of the state that's about as bright as Seattle. Ooh. From all the oil fields.
Oh, I forget about that.
All those gas plumes or whatever, the gas burn off.
That sucks. Well, tell us what is your favorite place that you've shot at?
Oh, that's really hard. I love them all. I couldn't say. Maybe Havasu Falls. I shot a night photo down in Havasu in Arizona, and that was a lot of fun. My favorite image I've ever captured is of Old Faithful, and that's because it's maybe the third night shot I ever caught. It's a very interesting photo, and I've tried probably 20 times to recreate it, and I can't. And something about chasing that is something I love to do. And Old Faithful is maybe an hour and a half from me. So, yeah.
What was the most challenging place that you've ever shot? Because I know you told me that sometimes you try, even in cities, to do some Milky Way shots. But what was your most challenging?
I mean, I've had some interesting challenges as far as shots. Probably Florida. Shooting down in Florida along the beach trying to get the Milky Way to show up was very challenging, especially because there's the humidity creates kind of a haze, and so it carries that light pollution everywhere. So I would say that's probably one of the hardest shots I've had to do as far as light pollution goes. There's definitely other things, though, when it comes to astrophotography, you know.
So I know that light pollution is something that I would like to work with, is the dark sky advocacy and trying to make people aware of light pollution. And that is something that really, really makes a big difference for astrophotographers. So what would you say to people about light pollution, of just your experience of having to work around that?
Well, it's just kind of a sad issue. It's something I'm very passionate about, but, you know, the dark skies are disappearing, and there's places that I shot near here even when I was first starting that there's a no-go anymore. There's just not that opportunity. And I kind of hope that through my work, you know, I get people excited, and, you know, I always share all the astronomical events when I'm posting images, trying to get people to go out. And I think that's how we can change this, is, you know, we don't have to get rid of light, we just have to control it better, and teaching people.
Absolutely, I agree with that entirely. So do you have any kind of astrophotography that you have a goal of being able to capture that you haven't yet?
No, but I just tried something new recently. I recently photographed a girl in a canoe on the water with the Milky Way reflecting and everything, and so I do believe in constantly pushing the limits. So I've really gotten into time lapses recently, in the last 6 months, and I've shot a lot of time lapses. And the way I shoot photos anyway is I shoot a series of photos, and so I've been able to go back and make more. I think the biggest challenge of things to learn how to do was to deal with moving objects like people in photos, night portraits, flowers blowing in the wind when you want to get those sharp details. And, you know, when I was in the car for 2 years, all I did was I'd take the same photos over and over and over again until I figured out how to do it. Right now, I feel pretty confident that I can catch most things in the dark, which is pretty cool.
That's cool. So if somebody were interested in getting into astrophotography, where would you point them to just start dipping their toe into the water?
I would say find somewhere with dark skies nearby, relatively dark skies, and figure out how to just capture the stars before you make a big trip somewhere. You know, you're going to need to eventually get a camera, but it doesn't have to be something that's multi-thousand dollars. My very first astro setup, the camera body was a Nikon D750, and the lens was a 1980-something film lens. And I bought the setup for $550 used, and I still use it today. I mean, I have two setups, and that one gets used all the time. And so, you know, yeah, you can spend $4,000 on the camera and then another $4,000 on the lens, but that's not necessary. Start small. Figure it out, though. Go out and do it.
I love that you do a lot of stuff with landscapes in it, and which I just think makes it feel so real. Because a lot of times we get used to looking at stuff that maybe we think is just astrophotography, when it's telescopes looking at nebula or other galaxies and stuff. And there's just something so magical even about just capturing stuff that includes our own planet's landscape. And you do, that's pretty much all you do. I love your stuff.
Yeah, so I love the landscapes too. And so the way that my photos are created is that they're captured as a series of photos, all at the same time and all from the same tripod position. And then I will blend them together so that I can make it look the way I want it to look and bring out that foreground. And that style that I've really like tried to develop is what I want to share with people. I want them to know that there's this beautiful world that we know. You know, you've seen Old Faithful. Nobody was there at night. I shot the photo of Old Faithful, only person there. I was probably the only person there about half the times I've gone to Old Faithful. And that's kind of what, you know, I want to show you that these landscapes, these places we know, you can go there at night, and they're beautiful at night. And I think that's funny, you know. You can't go to Old Faithful and not be in a crowd of hundreds of people today. You go there at night, in the dead of season, you maybe have 25, 30 people there. And, you know, go check that stuff out. And so that's really why I focus on my foregrounds and those images.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely a very unique way to get out and see the night sky and to develop a hobby that's attached to it. So I would say that your 2 years on the road would make you the ultimate night sky tourist. So congratulations.
Thanks so much. It's been an awesome adventure, and I hope it keeps going.
So how can people find you and your work?
So I'm on Instagram, MT Darkstar. I'm on Facebook, MT Darkstar Photography. And then I have a website, mtdarkstarphotography.com.
I'll put all of those links into the show notes so people can just scroll down and click on those real easily and jump over, see what Matthew's got going on, and pick up some pieces for yourself. Yeah.
Thanks so much. And yeah, if anyone has any questions, if they're interested in getting into astrophotography, I love helping people get into it. I love sharing that joy, so feel free to reach out.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Matthew, for being on the podcast.
You're most welcome.
Is Montana on your travel list? I have two other episodes focused on Montana night skies. In episode 50, I talked with Lynn Powers, the president of the Southwest Montana Astronomical Society. She shares some great locations for stargazing across the entire state, and she gives tips for cold weather stargazing too. In episode 75, I talked with Dori Gorsica, the lead interpreter and astronomy coordinator at Glacier National Park. Glacier is an international dark sky park, and it hosts many stargazing programs, including the really popular Logan Pass Star Parties. They also own and operate the Dusty Star Observatory at the St. Mary Visitor Center on the east side of the park. Montana is an extraordinary place to enjoy the night sky, and I can't wait to share more with you in my upcoming book about night sky experiences on Highway 89. In the meantime, enjoy these two episodes. You can find links for them in the show notes or by visiting nightskytourist.com/76. It's time for our tour of the night sky for mid-October 2023. Pause the podcast, turn off all the lights, and I'll meet you outside under the stars. Now that it's fall, we're in an interesting time for stargazing. The bright and exciting objects such as Scorpius, Sagittarius, and the Summer Triangle are leaving us, and the bright winter objects are about to come into view, such as Taurus and Orion and Gemini and Sirius. In between those are some historically and culturally important constellations, but they're not so bright. People who live under light-polluted skies might find it challenging to see these constellations at all. If you're in a really dark location, like Paradise Valley, Montana, you'll have no trouble seeing them. Start by getting your stargazing app ready. If you don't have one, just get a free one. You don't need to spend any money on it. Most of them are really great. I tend to use SkyView Lite, but use whatever you already have. Just make sure to turn down the screen brightness and set your phone to night mode so that you don't blow out your night vision. You're gonna need all the night vision you can get to see these constellations tonight. And speaking of night vision, it can take up to 40 minutes to get your eyes to adapt to the dark. So don't look at headlights on cars. Turn off as many exterior lights as you can. Keep your phone's screen brightness down, and don't use the flashlight on your camera. If you need a flashlight when you're stargazing, invest in a really cheap red flashlight. You don't need anything fancy. Sit so you're facing the south tonight. We're gonna hop across the ecliptic. What's the ecliptic? So imagine Earth's equator had a rubber band around it, and you could stretch it out into space until it touched the stars. There are 12 constellations spread across this band, and you also may have heard of them referred to as the zodiac. So let's start looking toward the right or toward the west. And I'm going to assume that you're stargazing around 9 o'clock p.m. So if you're stargazing at another time, things might be in a slightly different position, but it's okay. I'm pretty sure you'll be able to see all these things tonight. You may or may not be able to catch the last bit of Sagittarius above the southwestern horizon. I saw it a few nights ago and it was really low on the horizon. Now shift your eyes a little bit to the left or east from there, and here you're going to find Capricornus. It's shaped like a really wide V. The stars at the tips of the V are the brightest stars in the constellation, and they aren't even really all that bright. And the rest of the stars, they're even dimmer, so it makes this one tough to see in light-polluted skies. Use your stargazing app if you have trouble finding it. It is really big, though. Now look a bit farther to the east again to look for Aquarius. The Greeks and the Romans saw Aquarius as a water bearer because they had fantastic imaginations. Again, this one has a lot of dimmer stars, so use your stargazing app to locate all of them. See how many of the stars you can find with your naked eye. Okay, this next one is really difficult to see in light-polluted skies because every star is small and dim. I saw easily from Paradise Valley, but where I live in Fountain Hills, Arizona, I can only see it on a moonless night when there is no haze in the sky, and I get really lucky. Use your stargazing app to see if you can spot any of the stars. This is also a really large constellation. Next is Aries, the ram in Greek mythology. It has one fairly bright star, and the rest are rather dim. And again, only a great imagination could see a ram out of a straight row of stars. Depending on what time you're stargazing and what landscape is at your eastern horizon, you might be able to see the Pleiades, a small cluster of bright stars, often referred to as the Seven Sisters by many indigenous cultures. We'll be talking a lot about the Pleiades in an upcoming episode as it gets higher in the sky. Before we finish, I want to point out two planets along the ecliptic that are visible tonight. Well, all the planets can be seen along the ecliptic, but you can only see two with the naked eye tonight, Saturn and Jupiter. Saturn isn't super bright, but it is easy to see from most places. It's at the edge of the constellation Aquarius, which you found just a minute ago. If you have binoculars or a backyard telescope, you'll be able to see the planet's rings, which is a breathtaking sight. I will never, ever get tired of looking at Saturn through my telescope. Jupiter! I'm sure that you've already been looking at it tonight. It's the brightest thing in the sky right now. It's near the constellation Aries, that straight row of stars that the Greeks thought was a ram. Jupiter is amazing with the naked eye, but if you have binoculars or a backyard telescope, you'll be able to see 4 of its 95 known moons. Those were the same 4 moons that Galileo saw when he first pointed a telescope at Jupiter in 1610. You might even be able to see faint colored stripes, and those are the planet's storm bands. Spend some more time exploring the night sky tonight. Use your stargazing app if necessary, but I also encourage you to just spend some time seeing what you can see with your naked eye. Be unplugged for a bit and just relax. You can find links for everything mentioned in this episode, including all the locations I've mentioned, in the show notes, or visit nightskytourist.com/76. You can also see my iPhone astrophotography image from Paradise Valley there. That's nightskytourist.com/76. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist Podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist Podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it in your podcatcher and leave a written review. Your reviews are really important to me, and they help others discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks. Until then, keep looking up.